Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com will join us a little bit later in the program. We'll get into the Titans and the NFL draft, which is tomorrow, with him. Speaking of the draft, don't miss Nashville's best 2024 NFL draft coverage on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tomorrow at Twin Peaks in Madison at 6 o'clock, live coverage of the 2024 NFL draft as the home of the 29-degree beer will break down the pick for the Titans coming up at pick number 7, we think. We'll see if they stay at 7 or if they move back. See what happens. I guess they can move up. Coverage presented by Parma Tractor and Equipment, ESPN Bet, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Jared Stillman going to be leading that coverage. Trevor Maddich will be a part of it, and who knows? I mean, you might see Jared freak out like he's done a couple times on that draft show.
What's he going to do if he likes the pick? What are we going to do as a station if he likes the pick? I don't know. That's a scenario we don't want to encounter.
Well, I kind of hope they take Latham. I know. He could be playing guard. See what happens. Preds win last
JJ
night.
JJ McCarthy?
That'd be spicy. Preds win last night 4-1 in game 2. To even up the series 1-1, we're taking your thoughts on that on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Holding on for dear life in that third period. They get outshot, at least from an attempt standpoint, 84-36. The actual shots on goal, 18-16. So a very low event game in terms of the shots on goal. You don't typically see something that low from a shot total in a playoff game. But we saw it last night. Predators did a good job for the most part, I think, of kind of protecting the house in the defensive zone there. UC Saros with a bounce-back game. Philip Forsberg with a big goal in the second period. And I think one of the things that, as I'm watching that game last night, Joe, that I still wonder about moving forward, if the Predators can find a way to generate more looks 5-on-5, how vulnerable is Casey DeSmith? I thought, given what happened with him last night, you had the first goal that Forsberg takes the shot.
Brutal luck.
Redirects. It's bad luck. I mean, the shot by Forsberg, if you watch it, is going probably wide right.
Yeah, and that's where he reacted to.
Yep, Bevilliers tips it. It ends up going completely the other side in the net. Forsberg's goal was a great shot by him, great individual play by him. The third goal is kind of what makes me curious about it.
It's
because Bevilliers does a great job of putting the shot low to try to create the rebound. That was a fat rebound he gave up. Sissons got to it. Like, how vulnerable is DeSmith in net? The one thing that I would have liked to see more, there were a couple of times where they got in the zone last night offensively, and they were kind of cycling it around, trying to make the perfect
shoot
pass.
It.
And I was like, just shoot the puck, man.
Yes.
See if you can create some rebounds on him. And look, you know, Casey DeSmith's been in the league for a while. It's not like he's some nobody in net there, but he is a backup goaltender. He's not anywhere near as good as Thatcher Demko. And if I'm the Predators, my strategy in Game 3 is to put everything possible on net and try to get some dirty, greasy goals that way.
Yeah. No, there were definitely some times. I think maybe McCarron one time, I was like, yep, right there. You got to
pull the trigger.
Take that shot. Yep. And I agree. Yeah, like I thought the third one would definitely be the one that you would put on him. You can't make it that easy. I can't recall any saves he made of real note.
No.
You know, but it's just hard to evaluate because the Preds, the fact that they even got 16 shots, that's the lowest total in a Preds playoff win, and it doesn't seem like they got that many.
No.
You know, so it's like it's hard to evaluate him because he just really didn't get a lot of work.
He didn't.
I'm with you, like absolutely pepper the net and try to put him under siege the way the Preds were last night.
Exactly. And, you know, I thought a big moment in the game last night. So they're up 3-0. You're feeling really good about things, the way things have broken down for you in the second period. And then Vancouver gets the goal to make it 3-1. And then they get a late power play opportunity in the second period. And that was when I was like, oh, boy, if they make it 3-2 here, the place is going to explode. All the momentum is going to be with Vancouver heading into the third. And look, it played out where I mean, it would be hard for Vancouver to put more pressure in the third period had they scored 3-2 than what they actually ended up putting on the Predators in the third period. But I did think a big moment in the game was finding a way. Saros made a couple of key stops. There were two, I think, incredible like diving block shot attempts by the Predators to keep it 3-1 heading into the third. I thought that was a big moment in the game, because if they would have scored there and made it 3-2, then all of a sudden you're looking behind it for the Predators and you're like, oh boy, this is going to be hairy in the third period.
Yeah. Yeah, because even though they were totally just – it was just chaos in the D zone, you had that two-goal lead. So, like, it's just a different feel if you're clinging to the one-goal lead. So, no, I agree. That was a big-time moment for sure. I mean, look, they still, I thought, as much as they could not get the puck and they could not sustain anything – beyond the block shots, I thought that they were physical. I thought they were a lot more physical. You know, when they got the lead, I thought they really went to the body there in the second period. And they, you know, they still played with – they made a lot of poised plays in the third period, you know, to at least clear the zone and get a change. And, you know, I mean, it could have absolutely gone sideways. And, again, Saros, not a huge save night, but the third period was a little bit of a Saros show.
Travis on the text line, do we give any blame / credit of the lack of offensive zone time and offensive chances in the third to tactical changes from Brunette? I didn't like it when Hines did this, give a lead, squat, and defend. Personally, I'm looking for something to make me feel better about the absolute domination toward the end. I don't think
Brunette wants that.
I don't think
at
Andrew
all.
Brunette wants it. I do think once it's pretty clear that when they get in the D zone, the Predators are okay with them passing the puck and cycling around the outside, as long as they're not, you know, eating them alive with those seam passes. Like, Vancouver is really dangerous with those seam passes across the middle, where they're trying to open things up for the one-timer, or they're trying to open things up and get the goalie moving laterally side to side. And it's clear the Predators are trying like heck to prevent that.
Which means, in some ways, maybe you're not as aggressive than, you know, as you could be otherwise, because you're focused on that. So I guess you could say that's a little bit of a switch and maybe something that they could adjust. But, I mean, it makes sense. Like, the opportunities they gave up in the D zone are the kind you want to give up.
Yeah.
You just don't want to give up nearly that many, and you want to actually have some of your own offense.
Well, the bottom line is, I mean, we can talk about attempts all we want, and there's a clear advantage for Vancouver in that area. But I will say, through two games, the Predators gave up 21 shots on goal in game one, and they gave up 18 shots on goal in game two. That's a really low total in both games. So, I mean, again, you want to spend more time in the offensive zone. I have a feeling that if they're not able to do that in the course of a seven-game series, then you're playing with fire too much, letting them just hang around in the offensive zone that way. But the bottom line is, like, when it comes to shots getting through and getting on net, it's a pretty low total for Vancouver through the first two games. So something to keep in mind there. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. More of your thoughts on the Preds and Canucks coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Louisville Bats on the road. Pregame at 9:50. First pitch at 10:05. Coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We'll have Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com coming up a little bit later in the show. Right now, taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025. Ryan in Nashville on the text line. I know Carrier had a bounce-back game, but I'd look into putting Fabro back in the lineup, and the third line needs to get going. Other than Jankowski, Novak, and Evangelista, they look lost out there. Do you think that there could be any adjustments that Andrew Brunette makes with the lineup moving forward here? I would be
not
surprised.
Fabro.
Yeah, like, I don't. They're not changing the D pair at this point, unless somebody gets hurt.
Those guys were heroes last night, and I think they all – I mean, all those – I mean, you're not touching that.
No.
I mean, you know, now the other side of the forwards, again, last night he puts Beauvillier back with Sissons and Zucker, and Beauvillier had some major impact going back to Vancouver. So that was a nice adjustment you know, before the game. I was like, okay, interesting. I thought maybe as he kind of left it open, no game time decision or whatever, and I'm like, well, he's not doing anything. But then I was like, okay, that's an interesting move. Didn't take anyone out of the lineup, but moved the lineup. Worked out well. That's an interesting one, though. I mean, it's like you got dominated. Someone earlier said, what about Glass for Novak? Novak's not coming out. I mean, Novak has to play better. You hope that in his building, maybe, you know, that
when you can control the matchups
something
a little better. Yeah.
But I don't know. What would be the forward? And there's always Glass, and I'm not opposed to the idea at some point of Glass getting a chance.
Well, I mean, to me, if that was the move that was going to be made, it would probably be at the expense of Beauvillier. And after the way he played last night, you're not taking him out in game three. So, I mean, you could view it, if you wanted to, as maybe on the fourth line, you want a little bit more speed, a little bit more skill. Because speed's probably not even the right word. Like, I don't think Cody Glass is faster than Cole Smith. I don't think Cody Glass is faster than Kiefer Sherwood. Like, I think those two guys skate pretty well. You're not taking McCarron out of this series with the physicality that he brings. So, like, right now, like, if it's not going to be Beauvillier, and I thought he was one of the best players for them last night, then you're probably not taking anybody out for Cody Glass.
Again, it's funny, if you're just box score watching, the Preds just won 4-1 on the road in the playoffs. Shots on goal were 18-16.
Yeah.
No one would normally think at all about a lineup change, but yeah, given the way the game went, I understand the question.
For sure, yeah.
But I understand the question other than the Fabro. No way. I mean, I think Carrier, Lauzon, big time answered the bell last night after what happened in game one.
Well, they did, and like you said earlier in the show, like Stasny and Shen, I think have been solid. And again, last night when you get out attempted 84-36, the analytics are not going to be good. I mean, it's just not. The shot attempts, all those fancy stats, not going to be good. But I did think, like, Luke Shen ended probably 5 or 6 plays by Vancouver behind the net just by taking somebody and throwing them down the ice and then chipping it out. And that's not going to show up on the stat sheet. But I thought he did a really good job of just ending a couple plays last night and getting the Predators out of trouble and going the other way. Stasny, I thought about 3 or 4 different times last night, you could see why his skating is just a huge advantage for you. And I've said this before, in a league where a lot of people skate really well, his skating stands out. Like, he's a heck of a skater. And I thought he was all over the place last night, made a couple big plays just kind of in recovery that you feel really good about. So, like, with the way that Carrier and Lauzon responded last night, you know that Josi and McDonough are going to be together. I think their D pairs are in good shape right now.
Yep. What'd they call Chris Johnson and Lundell White?
It was, what was it?
Ground and pound, dash and smash?
Yeah, smash and dash. That's what it was.
Yeah. Shenstony is the Preds version of smash and dash. What do you think?
Luke Shen's Lindale.
Shenstony. Exactly.
Is he going to get to the end zone? Or I guess this would be Stasny getting to the end zone and playing the bongo drums like he did in Kansas City.
There you go.
I like it.
I like the pairing, man.
Like, Luke Shen gets a lot of crap from Predators fans, and I get it. Like, there have been times this year where he's been caught out of position and he's had some bad games. I think he's also, down the stretch, played better than most people want to admit. And I think through the first two games, Luke Shen has been really good for the Predators. I really do.
Yeah.
He's throwing people around.
He is smashing some people.
He's smashing some people. He's keeping himself in good position. Like, he's not trying to do too much out there, which I think is good. Now, can that continue through the seven games here? I don't know. We'll see. But I feel pretty good about, like, clearly they're trying to protect the house as much as possible. And what I mean by that is they are really focused on keeping Vancouver to the outside. And it kind of seems like, not that they want the possession to be as lopsided as it is, but it's pretty clear that they're cool with Vancouver whipping it around the outside as long as they're not getting those quality shots. Now, I do want, like,
they need to not be cool with them having the puck.
They need to not be cool with them having the puck as much as they are. And in all seriousness, like, home ice with the energy that I think is going to be in that building, the last change that you have if you're Andrew Brunette, like, how much is that going to factor into kind of evening things out here? And when it does, like, you got to find a way to take advantage of that if you're the Predator. Like, Novak, it's a big game for him. Like, you got to start finding a way to make an impact. And this is kind of going back to the contract discussion with him. While I was really hesitant, because he's such a liability in his own end that you have to be really impactful offensively if you're going to play top 6 minutes. And it's not been good for him so far through the first two games. He has got to find a way on home ice to make a bigger impact offensively. I really liked Evangelista's game one. I thought it was a pretty severe step back for him in game two. So that you got to get that line figured out.
Yeah, that line and like you said, maybe last change give you some more opportunities for those guys, but definitely need to see more from them. I mean, it's, you know, right now, you know, top line, like you said though earlier. I mean, Nyquist has been quiet, but they did some good things, and then you know, I think the Sissons line really was probably the star line of last night. But the other two, you need more.
Look, Sissons, he's taken a couple of penalties in this series so far that you don't love, but I think you're seeing, you know, we talk about playoff experience, I think you're seeing some of that shine through. He's always in the right spot. Zucker, I think, has been pretty good. And last night, I thought, was probably the best game I've seen Beauvillier play in a Predators uniform. Like, I just thought he had some jump to him. He was all over the place. Like, he created, obviously scored the first goal, created the third goal. There was another play early in the second period where he got the puck on the wing, made a great play to just get the puck on the net. Like, I thought he was, early in the game, probably their best forward last night, which was encouraging to see, because I didn't think he was very good at all in game one. And his ice time reflected that. Like, he basically got discarded in game one in the second half of the game. I thought a good switch to switch up those lines. I'll say this too, though. Like, I think Jankowski made a couple of big shot blocks last night, is good on the penalty kill. They need a little bit more from Jankowski moving forward too. Like, they got to find a way to solidify that line. I like having Jankowski with Novak and Evangelista more than I do Jankowski with Sissons and Zucker, because I think Novak and Evangelista need a little bit of that defensive responsibility on that line.
Yes.
And I think he brings that. So I think you'll see that stay the way it is heading into game three.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So the Beauvillier, you got you have that line, which of course is Trotz's two acquisitions.
Yeah.
And you've got the Brunette coaching move to put them back together last night. It worked out pretty well.
So. We got a whole lot of your thoughts to get to on our text line on the Predators. We will do that coming up next. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com will be with us as well. We'll take your thoughts all show long on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Got some tickets to give away to see the Pixies and Modest Mouse at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on Sunday, June 2nd. Be caller 5-615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to see the Pixies and Modest Mouse at Ascend Amphitheater on Sunday, June the 2nd. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com with us here on the program. PK, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I've enjoyed... Avoided or enjoyed.
I've enjoyed avoiding your hockey talk.
Freudian slip in my first sentence.
Don't get you shirted.
I've enjoyed your analysis of the game as I was on my way in. Seems like, you know, they're going to have to play better, or that's going to wind up being the stolen game.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you got to find a way to spend more time in the offensive zone. Joe, there's a lot of people on the text line talking about Fabro, and I can't for the life of me figure out what we're doing here.
Well, who do you want out?
That's the thing.
That's like the, you know, the thing. Fire the manager or fire the coach, but who do you want in? Like, everybody always wants something more, but they never consider the part where there's a subtraction that comes in sync with it.
I understand it after game one, right? Like, Carey and Lauzon were so bad that you're like, well, if that continues, you got to make a move. But I thought they responded really well last night. So, I mean, I just don't see that happening. To me,
coming off a good win, it's a lot harder to demand change.
For sure. Like, I would expect the lineup to be the same. The most important takeaways for me are threefold last night. Number one, what's kind of happened with Vancouver off the ice now. You've got Demko out, and it doesn't look like he's going to be back in this series. So that's a – I mean, look, think about the Predators losing UC Saros in the middle of a series. And it's a huge deal. It's a huge deal. So you got to find a way to take advantage of that if you're the Predators. I thought after one period last night, and I even tweeted this, I was like, what's going on with Forsberg? I mean, it looks like there's somebody else piloting his body out there. And then he finally figured it out. He scores the goal. That was just a great play by him to cut to the middle, lift the puck, put it bar down.
Nobody shows up.
Nobody showed up to check him. It was a great shot by him there. And then the main takeaway from last night is your goalie did not play well in game one, and he was nails last night in that game. And if that's the version of him you're going to get the rest of this series, that can be a difference in the series by itself right there, the way he played last night. I thought it was – if you're a Predators fan – yes, you're worried about how much you got shelled in your own zone last night. You're worried about the possession time, all that stuff. But the thing I think you feel great about in the aftermath of last night's game is Saros looked awesome. And I thought from a mental standpoint, for him to respond the way he did after a game where – I mean, he was a difference in the game in game one. Demko made a huge save, and he didn't. And that ended up being the difference in game one. The way he responded last night, I think, is very encouraging for them moving forward.
No doubt. No, he was great. The block shots were huge. There was a little luck in there. But the third period was one of those, oh, my goodness, many moments like that from Saros. So now you have that momentum from him. You're coming back home. You're going against a backup goalie. I mean, you know, this series is there for the taking, but they have to play much better. Remember with Saros, too, we've talked a lot this week about him in the playoffs. You know, last time that he had a chance to play in his building in the playoffs, now they lost game six against Carolina, but in game three and four, he became the second goalie in NHL history to have 50-plus saves in back-to-back games. He had 110 total, yeah, which is wild to think about 110 saves. He had, you know, 17 last night.
Correct.
But he has, you know, this idea that Saros hasn't performed well in the playoffs just isn't true. So does he take that momentum now into game three?
And we know how
they
flip
around the territorial, you know.
Right. And we know how these series go. I mean, there's a path for them if they lose game three.
Yeah.
But if you take the momentum from that game, win game three, and a raucous building and everything, you really set things up differently. You guys have made the important pledge off air. I don't know if you made it on air. To get to the bottom of how a double cup works, I'm picturing it to
story.
Be like nesting dolls, a small inside, a smaller inside a large. Not to say small, I'm sure it's large. I'm sure the small yeah. cup is a large
headline,
cup, and then the large cup is a very
I'm
large
sure it is.
Cup. But I'm picturing it like it's got to be nesting dolls, right?
I would assume so. I mean, I've never heard of this before. I've never heard of the double cup.
Now,
it's a great revelation from Saros.
Is it possible to have the exact same size nesting doll situation there?
I don't know. I mean, this is
the second one would not be very. I mean, just double cup like two the same size seems to me to be. The second one would be insufficient additional protection. I feel.
I agree. We got to get to the bottom of this. Joe, this is your task.
Hey, Joe, you might have to, after you talk to him, then you might have to go to a sporting goods store. And buy some samples to do a.
And then just punch myself a bunch of times in a row and see if it works.
Do a yeah. video that you could put out that would show. I mean, this is tailor-made.
New at the
like,
athletic.com.
If Joe Dubin was still on TV, this would be an unbelievable segment in his sport.
Why can't we do a Joe Dubin video and on the 1025thegame.com?
I think we can.
Why can't you?
Why can't we as a station?
The GameNashville.com.
Well,
yeah.
See,
what did I say?
Immediately expanded
I have
to the
wrong
station.
Website.
But he can't do it because of laziness.
The website was?
It's not 1025thegame.com. It is thegamenashville.com.
RobbieStanley.org?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's see if we
why
can't
Joe? I say, why can't you do it, Joe? Why can't we as a station do
big
it?
Joe.
I don't know.
Jared can do it. I mean, so here's the other thing, too, because clearly in game one, the energy in Rogers Arena was off the chain. It was their first playoff game there.
You should both be there, by the way.
I know.
Very disappointing.
I agree. It was their first playoff game in 9 years in that building. And look, the Predators, like even back in when they were playing the Hurricanes, it was a full building then. They were a huge underdog in that series. Obviously, we know in 2022, I mean, the series was effectively over by the time the Predators got back because of how much they were getting dominated by Colorado. With this being a Friday and a Sunday at Bridgestone Arena, I would expect we're probably going to see the best couple of atmospheres in that building that we've seen in a long time.
Yep.
And I wonder what sort of impact that has on the ice.
Yeah.
Clearly it did for Vancouver in game one. Can it have a similar impact for the Predators in game three?
Well, it has to. It has to from a territorial standpoint. I mean, think about what we've seen from the Preds, especially during the point streak, but just, you know, in the last couple of months, I mean, what happened last night does not happen to them.
Yeah.
I mean,
that hasn't really happened all year.
Yeah, like that level of just like you cannot get the puck. You cannot you are just icing it or dumping it, and then you're changing and you're just cowering.
Survival mode.
It's total survival mode. I just can't believe that that's going to happen again. I said it earlier. I really believe that psychologically last night for the Canucks, it was we have to win the – I know they're up 1-0 in the series.
Out.
But the goalie gets hurt. First of all, how many times have you seen in sports when a team has a key injury and then they respond? Remember when Ryan Johansson got hurt?
Yep.
And they go right out there and Pontus Åberg gets a huge goal and they win game five in Anaheim, and that's why they go to the Stanley Cup final. Oh, I mean, that happens a lot. And I thought last night, like, watch DeSmith just do some crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't. But that was a desperate, desperate performance by them. And it worked, other than they blew some opportunities. And Saros was great, and the block shots. It's hard for me to buy that the play is going to be like that the rest of the series. It's just these teams are too evenly matched for it to be the case.
I agree. They've got to find a way to get back on the forecheck and get that going. I mean, that's what's really – when you're kind of hounding people behind the net, one thing they've not done a great job of so far is really making Vancouver's – that when they get in the zone and they're trying to go dump the puck and get in – they're not making Vancouver's defensemen turn very quick. And you gotta put a body on them. Like, when Quinn Hughes is going back to retrieve the puck, you got to smash him. Like, when Tyler Myers, when those guys are going back to get it, you got to get in on the forecheck, and you got to find a way to lay a body on somebody and make them think twice about that quick breakout pass. When they're at their best, that's what they're doing. They're forcing turnovers. They're getting opportunities in transition that way, and the forecheck's a big part of it. And the forecheck through the first two games – has been largely non-existent. So in order to generate more chances, that's the number one thing to me that has to change, is you got to find a way to get that puck in there and then start hammering people when you get in there and force them into turnovers.
You think they're slow to get there?
It looked like it to me sometimes.
I think they are a little bit slow to get there. And one thing I think is clear through two games, not that this is the be-all, end-all, but it does help. Vancouver, I think, is clearly faster than they are. They're faster both from a foot speed standpoint, and they're moving the puck quick. But sometimes it's not just about speed. It's about, like, where you're putting the puck. You got to put it in the right spot to then go retrieve it and make those hits count. And I think when you have better matchups at home, you can control that better. So we'll see if the Predators can do that. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. We are one day away from the Titans and the NFL draft in the first round as well. We'll have Paul Kuharsky's perspective on that for the rest of the show as well. Take your thoughts as well on the Predators. Everything on the table, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Shut him up hard.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Joseph, the floor is yours with a nice Remember the Titans shout out in the background.
Yeah. So, first of all, to follow Thank this you. Up, shout out to Nate on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. I mean, how did we pass up the opportunity, as Kaharsky's talking about Saros's cup situation, how do we pass up the opportunity to joke about Kaharsky and his camera in the locker room figuring it out? I mean, duh. I feel like I totally whiffed there. So
I've been in the Preds locker room back in the past. It might have been It might have been before we had cameras on our phones.
Thank God.
Back in the Preds,
Jay Weber
Preds,
would have killed you.
Preds Red Wings playoff days. Did we have phone cameras? I don't know.
I don't know, man. It'd been pretty early.
We may not. I don't remember holding cameras up to interview guys.
Oh, man.
But on the Soros front, first of all, shout out to Alex Doherty out there for the Tennessean and got the greatest quote that UC Soros will ever give in his entire career.
No question about
it. And there will be more questions about the double cupping, let me promise you, this week before we get to game three. So I want to talk to you guys. I want to tell you guys on the on NFL draft eve, you know, we all rip on mock drafts, and, you know, I hate them. I have to do them here and there. And we do these, writer mock drafts at The Athletic. This is the greatest mock draft of my life. I am the best freaking mock drafter ever. I am amazing. And I just want to tell you why. All right, so here we go. And you know what? If this plays out for the Titans, then first of all.
Who doesn't say this? If this plays out, I'm a genius.
I should get like a finder's fee. I should get a finder's fee here, okay? Yeah. All right, so let me break it down for you. And this is out today at theathletic.com, by the way.
This is a rant.
This is a rant about my amazing mock draft. Shut your mouth.
He doesn't know what a rant is anymore.
I just yelled at you. That qualifies it as a rant. All right, so pick 7. Buffalo Bills, as we know. Buffalo Bills need a receiver.
They do.
Joe Biscaglia comes. Well, actually, no. I shouldn't say that. I offered up 7 because, frankly, I'm sick of drafting Joe Alt, okay?
Sure.
The Titans are probably going to draft Joe Alt. And that's fine, and it's a good move.
It's boring,
but like, I'm just bored as hell of it. Yeah, I just anything but Joe Alt. So he comes to me. Okay,
except you came to him.
But then he, well, I put it out to everybody, and he came to me. Shut up. See, that's a rant. Okay, he says I can do. So the Bills have 28. Obviously, they've got 60, 133, 160, 2025 first.
Okay.
I'm giving back 7 and 106 in the fourth.
Okay.
Boom. The chart says it's basically an even trade. Boom. Okay?
Okay.
So I just moved down to 28, everybody. If you're a Titans fan, are you freaking out?
I'm freaking out.
That's a big plummet. That's a big plummet. And so, you know.
I'm going to guess. Can I guess?
You're going to guess what?
I'm going to guess what you're getting at 28.
Hold on. We're not done, buddy. Oh, because this is some badass GMing right here.
Okay.
This is fantasy land.
So now. The draft gets all the way through 15 picks.
Okay.
And the one guy that I've been looking at, I'm like, he is still there. And there's some tackle needy teams. And so I reach out to Seahawks GM Michael Sean Duggar, and I say, what will it take for me to get into 16?
I'm like, I thought it was John Schneider.
Well, in this exercise, it's Michael Sean Duggar.
That's good.
So, 16th pick, I get it. I give him back 28 from the Bills. I give him 60, and I give him a fourth next year. And I take Olu Fashanu. So now I have essentially retained my draft capital from this year. I've actually added a pick, moved down with one of them. I've added a first-round pick next year, and I got a plug-and-play left tackle for the Tennessee Titans.
What,
thank you!
What are your remaining?
Greatest mock draft ever!
What are your remaining picks in this draft after 16 or 15?
Still have 38, right?
Still, yeah, exactly. So yeah,
38, 40-something?
So 38. Hold on.
Panic.
Gosh darn it. You asked me that freaking question. I'm just trying to. Yeah, so 38, 133.
So you didn't get me back in the third.
146. No, I did not get back into the third.
So it's not that massive.
That was pretty freaking great. Oh, you're going to whine about the third round.
Yeah, the whole point is whine to get another pick in the first
You don't days. Think of – so you get a guy that can
like
start for you at left tackle and a first rounder next year.
Well, I absolutely expect a starting left tackle out of this draft, so – good job getting what everybody expects.
And a first-round pick next year.
Very nice.
Thank you. You don't have to say anything else. I win.
It's good. It's not spectacular. And,
whatever.
And you're not making a pick at 38 for us?
Well, no.
Just the first round?
Yeah, it's just first round. Just first round.
Do you think
but 38, then I would
I mean, Joe's giving himself a parade for something that every Titans fan is sitting in front of their computer doing every night on PFF's mock draft simulator.
I didn't see that one on the PFF mock draft
simulator. I did like 25 PFF mock drafts yesterday.
Did you do anything that awesome?
I didn't do any trading. I wanted to see how many times I could end up with Joe Alt. I think it was 22 out of 25.
Let me tell you, the fans are absolutely in love with Joe Alt. And I think this scenario, something where they end up with Fashanu or Latham, is entirely possible. And I think fans will overreact negatively if that's what happens. I did an eight scenario bracket.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, like a March Madness thing.
That's a good thing to do in late April.
Yeah, and right now we're in the finals, if I may pick up where you left off. And so I've got 13 Fashanu, 38 Braswell, Alabama Edge, 44 Ricky Pearsall. That's a pretty good trio, I think. Versus Alt at 7 and Ladd McConkey from Georgia at 38. And that's winning. The Alt McConkey is winning.
Okay. So people are all in on Joe Alt. How far do you think they could move down and Fashanu still be there?
Well, that's the thing. This surprised me.
16?
Yes.
I would think 13. I will say this. Where's Seattle in this? 14?
Seattle's 16.
16.
I think Seattle wants Fuagua.
Okay.
So I think if you can get to Seattle, I think
you're
safe.
And he was gone, by the way,
him.
In this exercise. He was gone. So
I've talked to some scouts, and Fuagua is loved as a tone-setting guy. I don't think, and look, I'm no offensive line guy, and he didn't run a 20-yard shuttle at the combine, but everybody talks about how tough and mean he is, and I love those qualities. I don't see him as a great lateral guy, though. He didn't strike me as a mover.
Because some people think he's a guard, right?
Yeah. And some people see him as a right tackle, and I think the Titans see him as a right tackle. But I don't see him as a guy to get out in space as well as a lot of these other guys. But I've already quoted one guy just saying, like, people are way too caught up in a lot of this stuff, and you got to get football players, and this guy's a football player.
Well, everybody's connecting kind of that trio of Minnesota, Denver, Vegas to quarterback. One of those teams not going to end up with quarterback, right, unless you're just incredibly reaching on somebody. So whichever one or two of those teams don't end up with a quarterback at 11, 12, 13, that could really throw things off in terms of which, like, Denver has no draft capital because of the Russell Wilson stuff. So, I mean, it would probably take for Denver somebody falling to them unless they want to take a risk on a Bo Nix.
Well, that's what people
Michael
have
been
doing, just taking the next quarterback and one of those guys.
Are those guys not good
just because they played in college for 6 years and figured it out and were there forever? That's my feeling on both of them. I wouldn't touch them.
I look at those two guys very differently. I think Penix, if I had confidence in his medical situation, I think he's a really accurate passer. And I think he's excellent. And I think Nix would be a total reach.
I mean,
he's a good college player.
He
got better.
Nix doesn't have the arm. Like, that's the thing with me. The arm strength just really – like, if you look into his numbers, and some of this is the way Oregon runs their offense, but it's a lot of RPO, a lot of quick pitch – and very little down the field. And when it is down the field, it's because they've drawn open a play that's the receiver's open by 15 yards and you're throwing it down the field.
I feel the same way about McCarthy to an extent. I mean, I think you're drafting the personality, the leadership, all of that, and you're projecting the hell out of him because he played in such a run-heavy
offense. But his athleticism and arm talent are I think they're legit. Now,
but you don't have as much on film on him as you would want.
Right.
If you're taking him at 3, you know, or if you're taking him, you know, ahead of the Titans, that's a hell of a prayer.
We'll have more on the NFL draft. The Titans coming up tomorrow in the first round with Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.